come in and sit with us. We're four friends talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Hello, and welcome to Seniors in the Building. Last week, I attended a retreat with one of my granddaughters and her mom. In one of the activities, we created a heart-shaped image of relationships we developed or are engaged in today, using statements from things like memories, loves, losses. And then one of them was mentors or influencers in our life. And it got me thinking of mentors or influencers in my life over the years, and do I still look for them as I age? So who were mentors to us over the years? What kind of influence did they have on who we are and who we have become? Did membership change over the years? I don't think this is just a nostalgia theme, reflecting on who supported and encouraged us along the way. I think it's about who is influencing us into our seniors' years. So we'd like to have a conversation today about who have been mentors, influencers, and admirers, who we have admired over the years. So I was thinking about when I was 12 years old, I was introduced to Leonard Cohen's poems. He was such an odd duck, and the poetry was so weird. But I think that's what drew me, right? I thought to myself, here's somebody different who actually looks at the world in a different way than society does. And so I feel like that was my first moment of when I realized that you could be different in the world.
Interesting. I think that person for me, if we're in the same vein, was Joni Mitchell.
Ooh.
She was also sort of different, and her guitar tunings fascinated me, and she was never a trained musician, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. But she also had had a lot of influence on me. More so in later high school and university.
Having a hard time thinking about one, right?
Well, no,
that young,
got
right?
My mind going in a different direction.
Well, yeah. So if we think about, if I think about, I was going to say my first influencer, of course, was my mother, because she was the first feminist that I ever encountered, and she was. I didn't know it then, but looking back, she got it. She got that it was. That the world was patriarchal, and she got that she had to work harder in order to get further, and she I can still remember some of the things that she said to me, and so she had an amazing amount of influence on me.
Yeah.
I guess when you're talking about characters like that, I think of an old retired Englishman who had befriended my mother and father when they came over to Canada as immigrants, and he was a cook in a hospital, but he was also an amateur photographer, and he shared all kinds of insights with us, me and my brother, I'm referring to, taught us how to play poker, also taught us about racism. I remember very young doing a visit with him. He lived in Nanaimo, and he showed us a picture of a newborn, and very firmly said, this is the New Year's baby. But this was not the New Year's baby that got the awards that year, because the baby was indigenous and so was excluded from that award. And he went on about how unjust that was, how unfair that was, and that always sticks with me as you know, one of the first lessons about the fact that there was discrimination in society and how it should be opposed. So that's a bit of mentorship that sticks with me.
Yeah, that idea of discrimination, discrimination, I mean, that resonates with me too, because I had a grandmother who was divorced. Back, you know, in the 30s, that would have been just horrific. And actually, it was horrific in that the church had excommunicated her, right? And at the time, they had a little blackboard in the church entryway that listed all the people who had been excommunicated, right? You know, not a lot of people, but her name was up there, and her kids knew that every time they went in the door. And I think about how she tried to overcome this idea that, you know, it was okay to leave a person who abused you, right? It was okay that God was still with you, because she never gave up her faith. She constantly went to church. She constantly engaged in faithful experiences with her neighbors and in her church community. And so for me, that was sort of a, you know, again, another feminist move in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. Or a slam at the patriarchy, right? That you can't tell us that we need to remain in these kinds of situations as women.
Women having their own faculty.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. ability to make the changes that they needed in terms of making their life better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when I think about who has influenced me and who do I admire, it depends on what stage of life I was in.
Right.
Like if I look at when I was younger, well, it was my grandfather. Mm-hmm. Less so my grandmother, but my grandfather especially, who was, I think I could say, deeply religious, sat in the front pews of the church, and we would sit as our family with them, and there was a sense of pride, and he had expectations for the oldest male in the family, male child in the family, me. And it was theological. It was to be a leader, to be a spokesperson. Well, lo and behold, I ended up in seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And without that influence, who knows where I would have gone. But there were other influences too. But that's all upbringing. Parents, of course, and relatives. But then currently, like in the last 20 or 30 years, all I can think of are theologians and people I've read, not so much people I've met, though colleagues certainly have been influential. I could name them, but I won't. Mm-hmm. And they've been very influential. But when you're talking about patriarchy and feminism strongly influenced my thinking. But only because, not so much because I felt it, the patriarchal prejudices viscerally, but because it was deconstructing the tradition, showing that it was constructed by someone at some point, largely men, down through history, mm-hmm. which opened up the whole field of deconstruction then, taking apart, understanding the relative nature of these assertions and beliefs down through history, mm-hmm. down through Christian history in particular.
Yeah,
so it's interesting how those mentorships or people who've influenced us shape us who we are. I guess thinking back to my teen years, a new minister showed up in the church and in the youth group. And what I remember about him to this day is he spoke to us like we were people. Not like we were someone to be talked down to or controlled or silenced or told to behave.
Wonderful.
The youth group that led half of the kids that came there, it was fairly large, were not churched in any way, but were still meant to feel welcome. And so it was influential on me in terms of, eventually pursuing a career in ministry, but also how to relate to others within not just in the congregation, but within the community. You know, treat them like they are people, meet them where they are at, respect them for who they are, and build relationships that way. And that was profoundly significant for me.
And I found where my influencers, I started to notice influencers in my life was when I became a leader in the church, right? And I realized there must be other women out there who can speak to my context, who can speak to my anxieties about this, who can do that. And I name them, you know, quite readily, thinking about people like Nadia Boltz Weber and Anna Madsen, and you know, there's just Caroline Lewis. Rachel Held Evans. I think I had half my library was full of women writers, you know, or even Annie Lamont, who wasn't considered to be that kind of a religious writer, but you know, just life experience.
Very spiritual, very and influential.
Influence, right? And I was looking for people who could show me that it was okay to be who I was and how I lived my life in that particular time and in that particular kind of leadership.
Well, it just strikes me as interesting that, you know, people sort of show up in your lives when you need them, I think. I went to university and I was quite lost, actually, because I was first generation to go, and really my parents couldn't guide me, and I didn't have anybody that I went to that university with, but one professor that I took a course from my very first freshman year. Now you know I'm American when I say freshman, but first year. I continued to take courses from her. I must have taken 9 or 10 courses from her, and I was her TA eventually and her paid assistant for a while. And Leslie Lieberman, and I wrote a reference for her when she was trying to be promoted. And she was an amazing out-of-the-box thinker. And I resonated so much with that because I was always an out-of-the-box thinker, but I grew up in such conservative sort of rural constraints around that I was pretty isolated. And so that was my first encounter with someone who thought like me, and who could be wild and off the wall, and I just loved her.
And they could challenge you too, right?
She absolutely challenged me.
Yeah, I think challenging, having a mentor or an influencer who challenges us is really important to who we are too, because we could get stuck somewhere in there with somebody who's always, who seems similar to us, right? You almost need that little bit of an edge on the side of an influencer.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there were many things about my life and hers that were chalk and cheese, but she was brilliant. I thought she was brilliant. Yeah. And she unfortunately died when sort of in her prime, and I ended up with some of her books, some of the books that she taught from. And that I still have a couple of them, and they're very special to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and building a bit on that, some people over more recently, like Murray Sinclair, a professor named Martin Brokenleg, opening up the eyes and challenging preconceptions about colonialism, about indigenous society, and also about reconciliation, and the whole worldview, and how it's more inclusive, more expansive, more creation friendly, creation, and more respectful, and that's more recent, but really has had a profound influence on me and how, you know, I see the world, how I tend to maybe shape some of my messages or my conversations and so on. Yeah.
I can throw in Richard Wagamese, right?
Yes,
we have been deeply impacted by his poetry and his short stories, and so much so that we even bought our children his book Embers.
Yeah.
Because it deeply influenced how we thought about the world and how we believed that we should act in the world and towards creation. You know, in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like all of us are influenced in ways such that we reconstruct our world through these people. We see differently than we saw before. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of the feminist influences in my thinking, like Mary Daly. I saw her packed, I pushed to the back of a room, barely able to get in, at a conference she was speaking at. And the crowd was chanting, "Go, Mary, go."
Oh, cool.
That was very cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, she wrote a book that I used to have and it disappeared on me, Wickedary. Mm-hmm. It was showing the male-constructed nature of language itself, the English language in particular. And she made up words like academentia. Mm-hmm. I don't even need to define that, do I?
No, I think that makes sense.
That's
yeah.
Right.
So there was a realization through her and other feminist thinkers like Rosemary Radford Ruther mm-hmm. about the constructed nature of reality that has been passed on to us. It's not absolute. It's mm-hmm. relative to time and place and gender and persons. And that continued, especially that project of, and I guess I'm just continually on the project of deconstructing. But graduate school, after I did my Master's of Divinity in Chicago in the Lutheran Seminary, going to a world religions PhD program where other traditions were, by virtue of an academic ethic of neutrality, I think, looked at objectively. In the German, it's Religion Wissenschaft, the science of religion. Mm-hmm. Looking at religion from a non-prejudiced way or a non-adherent way mm-hmm. and just asking objective questions. So what opened up there was the deconstruction of religion itself as a multifaceted global phenomena and asking the question of why are people religious mm-hmm. or not religious?
So for me, I mean, you were the one, Jack, that introduced me to all of those female thinkers in religious studies. And it was an eye-opening, sort of an eye-opening revelation as you went through your PhD and you were tossing me these books and saying, read them, mm-hmm. that I got onto, and you've talked about her, Sally McFaggy. And
McFaig.
I always say that wrong. I apologize.
She's
Sally McFaig.
So she won't mind.
She won't care. But when you talked about your influence, Rick, that made me think of her, because that notion of the earth is creation, is mm-hmm. the body of God, quote unquote, and it is, we are immersed in it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that really was kind of earth-shattering for me in terms of my thinking about creation and thinking about nature and mm-hmm. our responsibility to the earth. Mm-hmm. Which leads into all kinds of other things.
Yeah, I think about my own leadership and when I became a leader in the church, you know, there was this movement, it was the early 2000s, right? And there's this movement of, they used to use this term postmodern mm-hmm. church, right? Mm-hmm. And there was just this constant debate about the way the church was and how the church should be, right? How it should grow, right? And it was exactly that. If I wasn't open to hearing new voices, or I wasn't open to hearing new, seeing new influencers in the church, I wonder if I would have been one of those people who got stuck somewhere along the way with the way it was or the tradition that we had, right? And so I found that if I opened myself up to other voices, that I could actually change some of that thinking, right? And I remember insisting on all of the deans of our conferences that they all had to go to this conference with me on missional thinking, right? And some of the older ones were just not too happy, and taking a 7-hour car ride with, you know, six of them in the car, and had to listen to.
Oh my goodness!
It was an eye opener for me, right? To sort of see, well, I guess we've got this, you know, old guard, and we've got this new guard in some ways, and somewhere in the middle, we've got to figure out, right? And so, I will say that even though that was an uncomfortable moment on the way down, on the way back, the dialogue changed. These people heard a different message and resonated with it, and it was just a moving experience to hear them talk positively about what they were going to do next in their ministry, right? And I look back to that and I say, all those people, those influencers who talked about emerging church, that changed me too, right? And as a new leader, and I think it changed the people who were coming out then too. And so I say that was a big, strong influence early on in the work that I was doing.
Yeah. And isn't that what a mentor should be, to my mind? Someone who takes you and not just sort of sticks you in a cocoon, but actually helps broaden your horizons, moves you forward in life, inspires you, gets you to see different perspectives on things. To me, that's what a real mentor or influencer is intended to do, not somebody who sort of says, yeah, this is your life, and this is the little small constructed life that you live in, and this is where I want you to live in because this is my life, but rather the opposite, sort of. Yeah.
That image is beautiful, from cocoon to butterfly almost, right?
Yeah. Mm.
You know?
So who influences us now?
Yeah.
I guess I'm sitting here thinking, ooh, go, Rick,
well,
go.
Well, it popped into my head more recently. The ones who influence me, I don't know if you'd use the term mentor, are my three grandkids.
Oh.
The two granddaughters who introduced me to all of these, you know, newer musicians. You know, I would have no clue about half of these, maybe Taylor Swift, but none of the others, who they are, these singers, except that they listen to it and they sing along with it, and I go, oh yeah, this is decent music. Yeah, the social justice messages, the matter of, you know, LGBTQ plus rights and discrimination against them, all of those aspects. And I've learned a lot from my grandkids. Mm-hmm. So
that's fascinating to think that our children are our mentors now.
Yeah.
And grandchildren to come for us because they're quite young.
Yeah.
Right.
But although I still learn from those two little
guys.
Yeah,
you do.
Sure
you do.
Yeah.
Because you know what they bring to us? They bring us an excitement about the world around
they
them.
Do.
Yes.
Their little eyes are just
they
looking
do.
At
yeah.
everything. They're so curious about everything,
yeah.
right?
That's right?
And we've lost that. We seem to lose that curiosity as we get older, right? We mm-hmm. we tend to kind of
and
forget
have
that.
A depth of listening and understanding that we can't appreciate, I don't think.
Yeah.
But it sinks in deeply to them. Mm-hmm. A tone of voice, which we were talking about this morning.
Yeah.
You know, as a grandparent or parent, mm-hmm. watch your tone of voice, because that is heard by the little people.
Yeah.
I think the problem for me, though, you mentioned postmodernism and the church, is that having gone through graduate school and learned about world religions, and then feminism and deconstruction, everything mm-hmm. becomes relative.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you stand then apart from relativity? That is, if everything's just constructed and Christianity is one religion amongst many,
mm-hmm.
for example,
mm-hmm.
What is the truth, I ask myself, that I hold to that mm-hmm. are not relative, but God forbid as a liberal to say this, absolute in some way,
mm-hmm.
for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difficult project. And I think that's the problem with postmodernism to some degree generally. That is, we're beyond the modern, where we used to know what reality was. And postmodernity now questions what reality is in terms of now quantum physics. We're not even sure anymore what reality is.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind ethics and truths.
Yeah.
Well, if I understand it correctly, modernism and what sort of preceded it a bit was trying to find the one big answer, whether it was through science or whether it was, say, through theologians. You know, we will put this all together and we
and
will find out
reality.
The knowledge, and this
yeah.
is the reality. And I think what they learned, or we learned through that process, is what we call sometimes postmodernism, that there is no one set, single, unifying truth, which I think is kind of disturbing, but also kind of liberating. Yeah, it's also kind of liberating again. You know, yeah. We've talked a bit about that before, how ambiguity and uncertainty can feel very threatening, but I think it should also feel a little reassuring, too.
Well, but what you're speaking to is complexity.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of complexity and a lot of things to weigh in on and to sort of try to merge to make some sense of as we are moving through things, because two opposite things can be true at the same time. And so it's very hard for our small human brains to sort of integrate that, but it's true. And so sitting with that and just allowing that to be,
that's a good point. Yeah.
There are, you know, things that can still surface for me when I do that. Okay, this is true and this is true, and that I can't make any sense of that, but I'm just gonna sit here for a minute with this and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one reaction to that is, no, I don't accept it. This is true, and becoming dogmatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Which I think.
But none of us do that.
No. No. But let's say that's the temptation.
Yeah, let's say that's the temptation. Yeah.
But damn it, enough is enough of this information and relativity.
Yeah.
This is true.
I also think that sometimes, as maybe because we're talking about aging, right, in terms of this podcast, but as people age, like, they tend to they don't want to deal with the complexities of life.
No. It's too hard.
It's too hard, right? They want something stable, quiet, peaceful, you know, and I admit I will look for that too sometimes. But on the other hand, when you're sitting in stability and in peacefulness, right, are you open to what the complexities of life will actually fold in front of you, right? What will pour out on you, right? What do you do with the news? What do you do with media and those kinds of experiences, right? Because if there's a stereotype out there, there's the old guy in the recliner watching the evening news, right, as you age, right? And so we have to kind of...
But then you can sit down with a few other old colleagues and solve all the world's problems over a cup of coffee and then go your way. Or maybe not.
Or talk to your kids and they tell you you're all wrong.
All wrong,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a form of influence.
Yeah. Yeah. How can you even
say that? Yeah.
Yeah.
My son has said a number of times, Dad, you can't say that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
You go, oh, okay.
Again, that's mentoring in a very simplistic...
A very Waschenfelder way.
Okay. Well, no, he's protecting you from
endangerment.
From someone who could come back at you.
Yes. Yeah. The back.
For how you're saying things.
No, I appreciate
it. You know, the way we said things growing up is very different today. And so language becomes a mentor in some ways, and when we think about how we need to say things.
Yeah. And yet language has always been evolving, right? I don't know where we thought that language was going to stay exactly the same when we got to be seniors, because language has evolved from my child, as I remember anyway, that it came from experiences in childhood, right? And all the way through, right? It's never static. It's almost always evolving. And yet you hear this comments out there about crazy old people who can't change their viewpoints or their attitudes or their language, right? And I think, well, it's not impossible, right? We do it when we really want to, but do we have the will to do it, right? And that would be my big concern.
Do we have the energy to change yet again?
Well, or do we have... So for me, it's a matter of, do we have those people or things around us that can help us make those changes?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that I don't want to.
Yes.
It's that I don't really know how anymore. Like, I don't know where to...
Where are the resources?
I don't know sort of where to intersect in things in order to stay sort of up on stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel a little more isolated than I used to. Mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm saying.
Although I can think about what millennials say about seniors, right? In terms of, well, if you would just look for that answer yourselves, right? Google it or AI it or whatever, you know what I mean?
Which I do.
Yeah, but not everybody does, right? They, you know, they're always asking the people who've had to experience our negativity from our language or whatever, we're asking them to bear that burden of informing us, which is not the way it should be, right?
And you're right.
We should
That's
be seeking
true.
The mentors who can...
I don't think I'm saying that. I think okay. I'm saying, how can I find ways to stay in front of mm-hmm. those kinds of things without putting the responsibility on someone else? I'm perfectly mm-hmm. willing to assume the responsibility to find out. I'm just not sure how sometimes.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah.
Well,
which
as
is
someone who uses AI now via the influence of one of my mentors.
Yes.
And if this is broadly the case beyond just me, there is more information available in an instant mm-hmm. than we could have ever imagined. Even now, apparently, the generators of AI are saying, cautious, be careful, because AI has potential beyond what any of us could imagine, mm-hmm. beyond information dissemination. And a lot of people apparently are just using AI as a Google, which mm-hmm. is what I do. And I've read that it's, well, I haven't read, but I've heard.
Yeah.
There are magazines now that tell you a ChatGPT is way more than a Google search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you know how to use it.
I think I want to go back to what you said, Signe, yeah. in terms of where are those resources? You know, I had a kind of an interesting transition out of being a woman in leadership. I couldn't believe how many times a young woman, pastor, leader, whatever, would phone me up or send me a text and say, can we have a conversation about such and such or whatever, right?
Wow.
And so I was still engaged in mm-hmm. the church in a kind of a distant kind of thing, right? And at first I thought, well, and I even used this language. Oh, I'm mentoring them, right? Mm-hmm. And then it occurred to me that actually they were mentoring me,
as
right?
Well.
It
was a mutual experience, mm-hmm. right? That's mm-hmm. mutual. This mentorship was a mutuality, this influence, right? That, yeah, they were seeking maybe some of my experience of how I might deal with a certain situation or et cetera. But the way that they were, the process that they were using was teaching me that I could look at things differently. Like mm-hmm. that. And so it was this, there's this mutuality in mentorship or in influence in some ways, right? You know, and I really appreciated that about
nice.
Them.
That's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was always the case. Maybe even though we were mentored by certain people or influenced by them over the years, especially those that we had personal connections to, we would also be having some influence on them as well. Maybe not consciously, but, you know, unconsciously, just by our engagement with them. Because I think if you enter into any kind of relationship, it changes both. You know, even if it is...
Sure.
teacher and student, or mentor and mentee, and so on.
Well, I think
I was thinking about, yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I think it needs to be said, too, that right here between the four of us, there's mentoring going on. Being in conversation with you guys and hearing Signe's thoughts on things, that's influence. You guys are influencers to us, to me.
Yeah.
In a good way.
And it's
yeah.
reciprocal, too, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're learning... Mm-hmm. some incredible things that we had no concept of or didn't understand in a certain way, right? And mm-hmm. so it brings that different voice into our life,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, kind of...
So that's one place where currently we're experiencing mentorship and mm-hmm. admiration and, you know, all those things that we've been... Inspiration, all those things that we've been talking about. So the one-on-one,
right,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or the four-on-four.
Four-on-four.
Two-on-two,
yeah.
or whatever we are.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and again, I see that as an ongoing process, you know, like what we're doing here, but also in our interactions with people at large. And sometimes we encounter people who we definitely don't want to be influences on us,
right,
or influences on us in a negative way, but that it's not something like, well, yeah, when I was a teenager and a young adult, I had a mentor and I learned, but now there's no need for that anymore. I think the need just is ongoing as long as we exist on this planet, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, thanks for the conversation today. I think that we've, it's been delightful to be able to talk about some of those mentorships and influencers that have made a difference in our lives. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RRS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design. As well, thanks to Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Fransblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input, and we appreciate the support of all of our families in this endeavor for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.